children, look at the future.
Hi, I'm Brenda Moyo. We moved to the Mumbwa district in central Zambia and discovered that wisdom does not only come with well-trained experts. Before people can take charge, there must be leaders who understand their needs. One such leader is Chief Chibuluma, who describes how people were cheated before they organized themselves.
At the time, we were just happy seeing someone coming in and said, well, he won't even come to the chief. He might go involve headmen and so on. Then they will direct this person to go and hunt in a certain area where there are animals. By the time he comes back, he will go by himself. By just a small pocket of milo, I've sold him all my privileges.
In Chief Chibuluma's area in central Zambia, a government-supported program called ADMED facilitated a similar development as in Botswana. Communities in wildlife areas were allowed to sign contracts with hunting operators. Let's hear what experience Chief Chibuluma's people had.
We were not given full information. At the beginning, you were just getting a figure given you are getting so much and so much. So we were not happy about the system. We were just given any amount, but now we have a copy being through the computer. And now this is when we can really understand and know this is the actual man.
Dr. Saiwana, who heads ADMED, explains how the system has been revamped.
We are now involving the local communities in formulating wildlife quotas. Our biologists, our unit leaders, our wardens sit together with the local communities in game management areas and then formulate these utilization quotas before safari hunting companies can be given their quotas.
Quotas are the numbers of animals hunters are allowed to shoot in an area per season. But Chief Chibuluma looks beyond such terms, having the welfare of his people on his mind in case something goes wrong.
If we don't have hunters, what are we going to do? That would be the end of our program. So we are trying to say perhaps we can even involve with the fish industries, honey industries, forestry industries, and we can even have some other profitable ventures so that we could continue. By that time, everybody will be involved to understand what is the benefits and why should we protect these animals.
To ensure sustainability, the old man has a plan.
Education must become most important to make people. We don't want just to go into punishing people before we teach them what is wrong and what is good. This is our motto.
That is a song by Shangani Children. We move to their area in the Manicaland province of Zimbabwe, where their community is involved in a highly sophisticated project with a Southern African hotel chain, and we shall meet Clive Stockhill.
There's a famous Shangan saying that a land without wildlife is a dead land.
Hi, I'm Brenda Moyo, asking you to be my guest on a safari to a wildlife-rich area in the southern eastern corner of Zimbabwe.
You saw it?
Yes. The buffalo.
Yeah, you saw it?
Of course.
It is night and the beams of the Land Rover catch a pair of moving eyes. Yeah. A buffalo indeed. He blocks the trek through the dry bed of the Save River on our way to the island of Mahenye, where tourists can enjoy five-star treatment. Before we entered the riverbed, we saw scattered villages in the bush. What do people living close to tourist areas usually get once these tourists have paid their bills? Not much, except a few dollars left with the crafts vendors and employment for a handful of waiters and cleaners. Here in the Mahenye area of Manicaland province, things are very different for the Shangani people.
There was this potential of them being adjacent to the Gonarezhou National Park, and it's obviously an asset to that community.
That is Clive Stockhill, a former rancher in the area who has a long-standing interest in wildlife conservation. But as someone who grew up among the Shangani, the welfare of these people concerns him even more.
It was one way that the community could, in fact, benefit from their old homelands without necessarily moving back, and that was to generate an income by creating a non-consumptive operation.
What Clive Stockhill calls a non-consumptive operation means an opportunity for tourists to enjoy the natural environment without destroying it. It was Clive Stockhill who made contact with Zimsun, one of the big hotel chains in Southern Africa, which then signed a contract with the Mahenye people.
According to the agreement which was made between Zimbabwe Sun and Chipinga Rural District Council, the community is to be paid $250,000 a year through Chipinga Rural District Council.
Lyson Masango is the deputy headmaster of the primary school in Mahenye and one of the activists of the local campfire group, the Zimbabwean organization which tries to increase the role of local communities in natural resources management. In the case of the Mahenye people, the benefits started to flow even before the lodge opened.
For the past 3 years, there's been in excess of 200 people employed on the construction of that lodge, which has probably generated, in terms of direct cash into the local economy, well in excess of $2 million.
We did not have any lights. This was pulled down by Zimbabwe Sun Hotel to their place there, and then extended to the township and the clinic. We have now telephones. We have one at school, one at the clinic and elsewhere. That was brought down through the efforts of the lodge. And again, all people who are working there are from our community.
One must bear this in mind, given that 15 years ago, that was probably the most neglected community in Zimbabwe. There wasn't even a road there.
Yeah, it looks like a hyena.
The dollars seem to roll for the Mahenye people from big business managed by a big company. As a result, they receive big money, but they remain a junior partner with no say in management and design. Today we are in Namibia to look at a community-based tourism project.
I worked for a safari operator. Then I went back to the community and asked them if I could start a campsite. I tried to look for a way to build the campsite so that it will create jobs in the area. The community agreed. Then I went to NGOs and asked for assistance. They gave me material worth 13,000 Namibian dollars.
That is Peter Uravi, who set up a campsite we will be looking at today in Puros, northern Namibia. Moses Nasilele, a director with the Caprivi Art Center, also in Namibia, agrees with the route Uravi took and explains what he sees as important elements in projects of this kind.
Tourism enterprises are actually controlled by the community, not by individual, because the site or the plot belongs to the community. If you look at a park, for instance, it means the animals have been in existence from time immemorial, long time. So if today you come with an idea of trying to set up a conservancy around that place, so it should be in collaboration with the people around.
We don't want to see tourism today and then disappearing tomorrow.
Janet Matota, a community resource monitor in Caprivi.
So I think that's where the concept of ecotourism is coming in, where we actually want to make them aware that we sustain it not just for today and for tourists to come and see and then tomorrow there's nothing. So it should be something which is ongoing. It won't be just a fickle thing, but we are trying to train people so that it can go on and on and on.
Moses Nasilele describes how this low-cost tourism venture looks like and what is happening there.
Simple huts made out of local materials, and the tourists will come and look at these things and talk to people, looking at people maybe cooking and dancing and so on.
Sharing of wildlife resources and of ideas appears to be yielding results. 45% of income from the campsite goes to the workers, 10% to the community, 25% to the campsite, and the remainder to pay back the loan. Community-based entrepreneur Peter Uravi talks about some of the remaining problems.
It is difficult for me to communicate because I am far from cities. Last month we received a letter from South Africa asking for information about the campsite, but because there are no telephones and a post office, it was difficult for me to reply. And anyway, I had received the letter after a month.
Despite such setbacks, Peter Uravi remains optimistic.
Traditional campsites create employment and reduce poverty. boreholes can be drilled and kindergartens built to help the children who are the leaders of tomorrow.
Across the region, communities are involved in different ways and they seem to be positive about the future. But is this a well-regarded euphoria? Ivan Bond, who works with Campfire in Zimbabwe, cautions.
There's something we need to remember here. These people are not managing their wildlife yet. Okay, these people are managing the benefits which are passed down to them by a district council. They're not actively involved in wildlife management. The safari operator still is hunting the wildlife. Just general wildlife management decisions are not made locally. So until people are actively participate in wildlife management, it will still always be something which is happening out of their control. In many cases in the Campfire program is that what we've done is we've empowered elites, wildlife elites, rather than large groups of people. And as a result, in many cases, we've lost that accountability. And those wildlife elites are no longer accountable to the larger community.
So, before we continue to look into skills needed to manage your projects, we pause to seriously look at mechanisms that guarantee full participation of everyone in the community. But what does accountability mean? Lillian Dimbi, an extension worker with Worldwide Food Programme, explains what has been happening in the Guruve district in northern Zimbabwe.
For participation at community level, what we basically need is information or communication between the elite that we're talking about, with the committees and the people. Because if there's no information, there's no feedback, that's when you have the committees as an elite on this side and the community or the people at grassroots level being left totally out.
Like in all struggles, the people who should lead must be the communities themselves. In Guruve district, there is an awakening.
Members of the community came together and they formed what they were calling a resistance committee, or a pressure group. So they were more like a lobby group or monitoring the committee, so that if there are some problems, if there's no accountability, they would then demand accountability from the committee. So I think in a way it has put pressure on them to be accountable.
But for communities to really know what is going on, to meaningfully participate, they need to equip themselves with skills to make them aware of the possibilities that their environment provides.
Initially, when the request came, it was bookkeeping and financial management, but we have realized we are looking at things like project planning and project management, which includes drafting up a budget, monitoring of that budget, and reviews. And there's been some progress because people are actually beginning to understand the importance of planning for things, having the right prices, getting the proper quantities, so they're actually getting the idea of using information to make an informed decision.
Maxi Lewis works with grassroots tourism projects in Namibia. She thinks that before starting a project, it is important to know clearly what the business you want to set up is about, what you want it to accomplish, and the market you want to serve.
One important thing that we realized when we're doing, say for instance, our needs assessment within some of these enterprises, we realized that people really need training. Once you like to set up any type of thing, especially when it comes into tourism, because it's a very competitive industry, you need to have some training. And the other thing is also that you need to have access to finances.
Here, Maxi Lewis talks about some community members who got finance for their tourism projects.
They got funded by some other NGOs or other or a company, or went into a joint venture with some private tour operators. So those ones are running, and some of them are doing well, some of them are not. And then you have another category we call emerging enterprises, where people sit on the resources, but they don't know what to do with the resources. Then you have another category. They have the idea, they want to set up something, but they really don't know what it is all about.
So before you move to looking for finance, you and your people need to acquire skills to carry out the project. Otherwise, you'll remain dependent on advice from outside. And the result, you lose control. A good point to remember is that communities should be wary of entering contracts which they are not clear about. Chief Mahenye in Zimbabwe's Manicaland province highlights this problem when he says,
"We are
not sure about the benefits, about what the white people are doing there. We have not received much. We have not received anything. We will know how much the project makes each year. They will do whatever they do there. We cannot say that we have anything there."
Chief Mahenye's community, you may remember, is in partnership with Zimbabwe Sun Hotels. The Jewel is a sophisticated lodge close to a national park on land that was once the home of the Shangani people. Although they receive a share from the income, they were not involved in design and management. They are not the owners of the project. For communities to feel that they own something, that they are participating meaningfully, governments have to give more control to them. Moses Nasilele, who works with community-based tourism projects in Namibia, says,
"People in the rural area are contributing a lot to this industry. So they must be, you know, given some kind of voice to actually speak up, maybe to lobby problems to the government, maybe to have access to, you know, funding, maybe access to control of these resources so that they don't just run out, or people cannot just come and start utilizing them in a selfish manner or exploiting or whatever."
People should also pool their knowledge, resources and skills and share them. They can do this by forming associations which safeguard their interests.
The idea of NOCOPTA is actually to actually become that shield for all these enterprises. Now we find it is because those people maybe need training. Maybe they need to know more about how they should go about. So NOCOPTA will serve as, you know, as an organization that can help in training all these, you know, people who are involved in the tourism, and also exposure, maybe trying to expose them to the outside world so that they can be known. And also maybe to teaching them more about also on how offering service, like maybe the rooms, like welcoming people, all these kind of hints, you know. So this is what NOCOPTA is involved in.
Sometimes skills cannot be taught at workshops over short periods. In this situation, finding a partner with skills offers the best way of gaining them. But before drawing up agreements, insist on contracts that ensure you acquire these important skills. This is a type of understanding which will avoid situations such as the one Chief Mahenye finds himself in. We look at communities in Namibia, Zambia and Zimbabwe who have found a clever way to monitor their wildlife resources. They use people from their communities who have an interesting background. Simpson from the Save the Rhino Trust in Namibia explains.
We put a game guard system in where we approach the community or the people who are in the community, make them game guards, and they are the ones who are looking after the animals now. And I must mention that all the game guards, nearly all of them, 90% of them, was ex-poachers. And they are the best game guards now, looking after the animals.
Shoti, a herero in Puros, Namibia, is the classic example. We learn from him how he was chosen.
The most important point that makes me a community game guard is that I was a hunter. I used to kill a lot. That is why the headman felt that they recruit me in this job, so that I can be in charge myself. Otherwise, I will still be a poacher today. That's why they made me a community game guard.
But has the setup started to pay dividends?
I have been successful because there were only two zebras in the area. Now there are 600. There were only two black rhinos, but now there are 9. There were only 5 elephants here. But today there are 30 in the area. That means my job has contributed a lot to the rise of wildlife in the area. People used to poach, but when the community game guard program started, poaching went down.
In Zimbabwe, in the northern province of Guruve, Chief Chisungo says,
"We elected anti-poaching units who scout the bush to look for traps and snares, and also see if there are any poachers killing our animals. No one is going out to kill animals unless it is the safari operators who have permission. And this is because they have paid for it."
These endeavors are not only in Zimbabwe and Namibia. We find them also in Zambia. There, the young men trained from the community are called village scouts.
Previously, we were facing a problem of poaching, and these people are the ones we are poaching. Now, we have provided employment to them to enable them, I mean, support their families. So the monies or the revenue that we that is accrued from wildlife resource is given to them as an incentive, and we call, don't call it salary, but an incentive for appreciation with what they are doing to safeguard their resource, wildlife resource in that particular chiefdom.
From all we have heard, this appears like a men's world. What about the role of women? That is a song from Namibia. The singer shows off her aristocratic origins and adds that where she comes from, there was always meat. Today, the status of women in most rural areas of Africa is one of poverty and disadvantage. We look at how women have been involved in community-based projects that utilize natural resources. We are more involved in some of these domestic duties like preparing beds in the tents, cooking and washing, and many others. That was the answer of a woman in Sankuyu in Botswana. The program that trains locals as escort guides there is headed by local men. Nkape is in charge of selections. He says,
there is no lady who is an escort guide. It's only men. We realize that ladies cannot be efficient in that, especially that it involves walking in the bush where there are lions. Probably they might not be brave enough to meet such dangerous game.
Women in African countries who participated in liberation struggles carrying guns through the bush will find such an attitude ridiculous or even offending. Changes in wildlife management call for changes in attitude as well if community-based projects are to survive. In Botswana, some women have already taken their chance. We as women also bought hunting licenses from the department, and we gave our licenses to the safari operator to go and hunt on our behalf. So it was a good arrangement that we benefited from. And we were also able to buy meat, which is sold locally. Janet Matota is Senior Resource Monitor at the Integrated Rural Development and Nature Conservation, IRDNC, in Namibia. Women there learn how to utilize palm trees for handicraft.
The thing which has encouraged them, they are also getting benefits like cash from that resources, making basket and selling them. So now they are really aware of that and they are really interested to monitor the resources. They are even interested to have their own palms in their areas. We have been helping, but the problem we are finding is that we are still lacking of more resource monitors. If the program will maybe get a stand so that maybe we can have more involvement of women. Being four in the east and the area is too big, we can't manage to visit each area and educate the women.
Janet Matota adds an idea which could help women to empower themselves, networking across the region.
What I would like to see in the women is if maybe they can have exchange visits like Zambia and Zimbabwe. Let me give an example of palm garden which I am hearing in Botswana and Zambia and see how far these people they have gone with their palm garden so that they can improve in their areas. Because by telling them without seeing, they can't believe.
Women can be one driving force for change. Another could be old people in our communities. That communities can use natural resources and that they belong to them seems not always to be obvious, as Uleka Itakadu, a game warden in Botswana, once experienced.
Most elderly people, you know, they cannot just agree and believe that the department can give them a quota to hunt for the sake of hunting because they are that community, just giving it to them free of charge. So this old man was saying, man, I don't want to be a prisoner by accepting your quota.
To people who have been systematically disempowered over generations, a lot of new things will be viewed with suspicion. And the suspicion rests mainly with elderly people. They are the ones who have seen it all. The dispossession of land, so many empty promises after independence, the rise of new elites who claim to talk on their behalf. But our old people remain, at the same time, as the guardians of our traditions, as the messengers of ancient wisdom. They need the experience of a true change to advise the correct path. In Botswana, some got it.
The immediate benefit is that the elderly people within the village have suddenly found they've got job functions. We have employed quite a few of the elderly people in various jobs. We've created work for them.
That was Chris Collins, business partner in a professional hunting venture with the Sankuyu community in Botswana. Providing information will also avoid what Nick O'Connor sees as basic misunderstanding of competition. He is an advisor on natural resource management to the Guruve Rural District Council in Zimbabwe.
The main problem we have in Zimbabwe with the communal system is that all human nature is selfish, and in a shared situation the thinking is rather I eat a fruit green, because if I don't eat it green my neighbor will eat it and I won't be able to eat it. And it's the same with timber. If I don't cut that tree down, he will, and therefore he'll have the use of it and I won't have the use of it, so better I cut it down before he cuts it down.
This selfishness, as we discovered in earlier episodes, derives from alienation of communities from resources that they once controlled. Control over land in communal areas and acquisition of skills form the basis for real empowerment. And we see it fit to close this chapter by repeating the words of wisdom of the old man in Zambia, Chief Chibuluma, who tries, against all odds, to lead his people into an age where they will be able to determine their own destiny.
Education must become most important to make people. We don't want just to go into punishing people before we teach them what is wrong and what is good. This is our motto.
I'm Brenda Moyo reminding you that taking care of the nature around you is an easy way to improve the standard of living for you and your family.
Living Ideas was brought to you by Africa Resources Trust and its associates and made possible through the United States Agency for International Development, produced by Radio Bridge Overseas. Say, say, say,